Hello, and welcome to the Homeschooling and Loving It podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, your friend at homeschool.com and homeschool mom of six. Join us as we keep it real and chat about the ups and downs of this amazing adventure we call the homeschool life. So grab a cup of your warm favorite and a comfy chair and let's get started. Hello and welcome to homeschool.com's Homeschooling and Loving It podcast. We are glad to finally be back. It's been a little while, but now we are back with a nice, exciting podcast for you today. And this week, we're going to talk about the importance of educating our children about what money is, its historical properties, and even how money is created. So let me introduce you to Phil. Phil Dennison is founder and CEO of InflationEducation.net. Better bedtime stories revealing the secrets of the debt-based fiat money system using the principles of liberty, sound money, Austrian economics, and natural law. Phil holds a BA in economics from the University of Colorado. And this is the interesting part. This is a little bit about what he does. With InflationEducation.net, Phil was able to marry his two passions, understanding the history and mechanics of our monetary system, and using story time with his four children, ages 5 to 14, to reveal the wizard behind the curtain, so to speak, preparing them for the debt-based fiat money system that awaits them. So we want to welcome Phil.
Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I recently discovered your website and podcast and I've really been enjoying it. So thank you to you and your audience.
Oh, awesome. I'm so glad. That's encouraging. Just kind of to jump into our topic today, I know it's pretty much common knowledge, you know, wherever we fall with life or faith or politics, I think we can all agree that our country is in financial trouble. And most of us as parents, you know, especially homeschool parents, we realize that we really need to be proactive, take a step back, begin educating our children if we haven't started already. And sometimes even educating ourselves about money and even for financial stability in the future. But I noticed when I was reading your bio that you mentioned the debt-based fiat money system. And I hope I'm saying that correctly because I wasn't even sure about that. These are terms that not all of our parents are familiar with. And I was hoping you could just take a minute and help us better understand that concept.
Absolutely, Jamie. And you're exactly right. I mean, most of us, really all of us, unless we've taken time to do our own research, have been raised to believe that our money system is just the way that it should be and the only way that it could be. And actually, that's not the case at all. So terms like debt-based fiat money, and that's the system that we live under today, and I'll explain it a little bit more, but they're not terms that we hear in our lexicon, and they're certainly not things that are ever introduced as part of any public or private school system. And it's hard to find even in homeschool curriculum because, again, we're sort of conditioned to believe that money just is. But when I use the term fiat money, first, fiat itself means by decree. So fiat money is money that the government has decreed should be used for that purpose, and the only thing that should be used for that purpose. And the distinction is with the concept of sound money. So sound money historically refers to money that's backed by gold or silver. And for 5,000 years of human history, what's worked best and what's been chosen by the free market to act in the role of money is gold or silver coins or paper or digital representations of gold and silver that are in fact backed by a fixed weight of gold and silver. And actually the US Constitution in fact requires that. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution says that no state shall make anything but gold or silver legal tender. Because our founders knew, right, from history that sound money worked the best. It's a fair system by which, you know, the only way to obtain gold or silver, money that's backed by gold or silver, is through work to earn it or through trade or taxation as a government, but nobody in a gold or silver standard can create money from nothing. They can't conjure it up from thin air. The system that we're on today is a historical aberration, and it began on August 15th, 1971. And just to kind of go through history, we've been on one form of a gold or silver standard for the country's since the country's entire founding in 1776 until 1971. And the last version of that gold standard was developed under the Bretton Woods Agreement as the United States was winning World War II with the Allies. We had actually accumulated at that point two-thirds of the world's gold because the entire world was on a gold standard, and we were supplying the Allies in Europe with weapons and food and taking gold in return. And so we had two-thirds the world's gold. We were on the cusp of developing the atomic bomb and dropping it on Hiroshima, and we were the clear victors in the war. And in part because the American system, the economic engine that was unleashed by things like sound money and principles of liberty and Austrian economics and personal responsibility and natural law, the founding principles of our country, led us to that state of being really the world leader. And so we dictated terms in 1944 in what was called the Bretton Woods Agreement, where the US agreed to exchange dollars for gold at $35 per ounce. So that was the gold standard that came about on that date. And every other country pegged their currency to the US dollar at a fixed rate. And so that was the international monetary system. But for the next couple of decades, and the economist Robert Triffin pointed this out in what's called Triffin's dilemma, it's that whichever currency becomes the world's reserve currency, there's a demand for that currency outside of the country. So there was insatiable demand for US dollars to trade international goods and to buy oil because the dollar was the world's reserve currency and it could be counted on. And as a result, America began to spend more than our gold reserves had in backing. Specifically in the 1960s, the terms used to describe this are guns and butter being, the Vietnam War, and butter being LBJ's Great Society programs like Medicare and Medicaid. And as astute international leaders like Charles de Gaulle in France and others began to notice that America was spending, creating more dollars than it had a gold to back at that $35 exchange rate, the wise move began to exchange those dollars for gold. So de Gaulle and others would actually take those dollars back to the US Treasury in Fort Knox and exchange them for the gold that we had. And Fort Knox was basically halved. So we went from having about two-thirds of the world's gold down to about one-third. And it was going to continue to drain unless we got a better handle on our spending. And so on August 15th, 1971, the Nixon administration closed the gold window. They, what they called at the time, temporarily suspended convertibility of dollars into gold. And at that point, we became solely a fiat money. And in, the entire world, of course, went to a fiat money system because every other currency was pegged to the dollar, and they were allowed to then free float. And the dollar was pegged to nothing. So that's money by decree without any real backing. And thus began the great, what I call the great financialization or the hollowing of America and the world really with debt, because now governments and banks could create money from nothing. And the way they do that is by issuing loans. So every dollar that's in existence today, whether it's base money created by the Federal Reserve, when they do that, they buy treasuries from the government or mortgage-backed securities. All of those are loans. So it's all debt-based. And it requires endless growth on a finite planet. So it's quite literally the root of so many of the world's biggest problems. But that was really a change in our country's history that most people alive today, don't necessarily remember. Either they were born after or they were little at the time. But for, 200 plus years, the United States was on a gold and or silver standard. And that's that concept of sound money, where the only way to obtain money is through work or trade or, upfront about taxation by governments instead of creating money from nothing. So I went on for a while there, but does that make sense? The difference between fiat money and sound money, money backed by gold or silver?
Absolutely, it does. And there were so many things that you brought out that I never learned. I have several college degrees and never learned these things. So that's kind of concerning to me, and obviously brings to top the the problem that we have as parents who are looking for ways to educate our children.
You said it right. So I have an economics degree. So if anybody would have learned this in school, you'd think it would be me, but actually I didn't either. This is the stuff that I had to self-educate myself on later, in part because, I was coming of age as the graduating college in May of 2000 as the tech bubble was bursting. And at
Right.
that point, I'm wondering how could the masters of the universe, the people in charge and pulling the strings in New York City and Wall Street and Washington, D.C., how could they not have seen this bubble that we've blown up, on with tech stocks? And but I chalked it off. I started to look into bubbles a little bit and chalked it off as maybe as a once in a lifetime thing, like the tulip bubble that we hear about in the or the South Sea bubble of history. But then as I began my career and started, started to buy into the mainstream information, I continued to study economics, but more mainstream financial stuff. And it was only 8 years later that we were in the face of the great financial crisis and the housing bubble was bursting. So at that point, I said to myself, okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It's time for me to really understand what's happening here. And as I learned more and read more, what I found out was that there were two competing schools of economics in the mid 20th century, Keynesianism and the Austrian School of Economics. And Keynesianism really is the idea that the government can manage the economy by creating new money and forcing interest rates down during periods of slump, and therefore smooth out the business cycle. And the School of Austrian Economics could really come down to the concept of individualism, where Keynesianism is collectivism in a top-down, centrally planned economy. The Austrian school is individual liberty, freedom, what this country was based on, that individual actors will make the right decisions and the government shouldn't try to manage the money supply or control the economy. And the reason Keynesianism won in the halls of power, despite our founders knowing well, early on that the Austrian concepts and individual liberty was more right, is because Keynesianism consolidates power in the hands of government. And so, of course, that's going to be the favored tool by which those that are drawn to positions of influence in government and academia will adhere to. So what they teach you, I mean, there's a couple of colleges. I think it's James Madison, that's focused on the Austrian school, but most focused on Keynesianism. And so this was all stuff I sort of had to self-educate on. And in part, I don't know if that's, calculated, right? Because we have to preserve this myth that the money system is just the way it should be and the only way it could be, because otherwise, even Henry Ford once said, if the American people knew how our money and banking system worked, there would be a revolution by morning. And so we're it's become groupthink, and you really have to dig this information out.
Wow, that it's kind of revelatory. I mean, kind of reeling a little bit by all of this history, and I can remember early grade school. I think, and that would have been like 70s, maybe the late, very late 70s, early 80s for me. And my teachers, I guess maybe they hadn't clued into all of these facts either, because I remember clearly being taught about Fort Knox and the gold and how the gold backs up our money and all of that, but not this. Interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. We use the term, we use the term gold standard to describe, the best representation of anything out there, right? Because that's a term that's stuck with us for centuries.
Absolutely.
Gold standard means the best, and we're not on a gold standard as a
No.
money system. And I think that really says it all, that instead we're on a fiat system, which creates imbalance in so many ways. The Austrian economists, and sorry for all the jargon, but they call it malinvestment, right? So not only is it an unfair system where those closest to those who can create money, which are banking cartels and the government, receive undue influence and opportunity, but it also sends distorted signals across the economy when they're forcing or setting the price of interest rates. I mean, listen, central planning doesn't work. The Soviet Union, wasn't effective at setting the price of milk or eggs. Well, the price of money or interest rates is the most important signal in the entire economy. When that is centrally planned or managed, it sends distorted signals to entrepreneurs about supply and demand who get involved in projects that otherwise wouldn't make sense. And this is what's described as malinvestment that results in this boom bust cycle of financial bubbles that are blowing and then bursting and then being selectively bailed out. And we're basically at the precipice of potentially another crisis where we walk on the razor's edge, where they've held interest rates down for so long. It's created a lot of malinvestment, bubbles that want to burst. But that will cause tremendous destruction to the economy. But the result, if they don't burst, is that we get inflation. And that's why you're seeing at the grocery store, not only because of, supply shocks with the COVID lockdowns, but really the money printing that's been rampant. And so our kids, right, they're gonna grow up and leave our home at 18 or 22, and they're not gonna understand any of this if we rely on just the mainstream information that they're gonna get from school curriculums. And so what happens then? It's groupthink. They get chewed up by a debt machine. They're forced to choose between two political parties that are, different only in small ways, but both feast on the ability to create money from nothing. And so when I thought about, I mean, I've been reading to my kids for 15 years or 14 years, sorry, my oldest is 14. And boy, for the first few years, probably five plus, it was a great time and we read all the classics. But I started to wonder if I was missing an opportunity to use that hour to teach them something that I've learned maybe the hard way that they're not going to get anywhere else. And that kind of led me down this path in the first place.
Right. So that's a perfect lead-in. I was just going to mention, we've talked about these issues, obviously, and a lot of the history that we do need to convey to our children so that they're aware of it. But then there's this third aspect, and that's where probably where I come in this whole deal. But we've seen a lot of conversations in our homeschool communities or social media that indicate that homeschoolers are interested in finding curriculum around financial foundational concepts. And so, that's one of the things we do at homeschool.com. We help homeschoolers find curriculum that fits their needs. And to be honest, there are very few curricula or resources, teaching resources. It doesn't always have to be a formalized curriculum, but there are a few resources out there that teach this subject matter comprehensively. And so I'm hoping now that you can tell us a little bit about what you do, your website, and your resources that you have that can help homeschool families.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I bring, I think that's unique. One is that perspective that before we start to focus on, and there's a lot of good mainstream financial information out there, right? One of the best things kids can learn about is saving and investing. But for me, what's more important first is to teach them about money, about the essence of money, about what it is and what it's not, and what's historically worked best in the roles, so that they can understand the distinction between sound and fiat money. Because if they get that, they'll be able to put together things that others don't see, and they can anticipate where it's going. For example, there's really different kinds of debt in the world. There's good debt and there's bad debt, and a lot of people take the notion that all debt is bad, and that's definitely a good place to start. But the wealthy and the poor use debt differently. The poor use debt consumptively, car loans and credit card loans and payday loans, whereas the rich use debt to accumulate assets. And that's a concept that actually kids can understand a lot easier than you think before they become teenagers, where it becomes groupthink that everybody uses debt, student debt, credit card debt, et cetera. If you teach them early the differences, there'll be worlds ahead. But then there's the mainstream. So how do we do that? That's our line of what we call better bedtime stories. And these are things that they're not going to pick up in one sitting, but just like the classics, we mix them in with Dr. Seuss and The Day the Crayons Quit and all the others. So they're going to hear these books, every couple of weeks for, 5 years. And then you're creating indelible memories in their minds. The first is what we call Where Does Money Come From, which is the delightful beginning, talking about the difference between sound and fiat and some of the concepts we've talked about already. And then Good Debt, Bad Debt, and the Big Green Blob. That really, they love this one because it, we use the analogy of a big green blob to describe the money system, which in fact, in some ways it is, because when our debt-based fiat money system isn't growing, it's collapsing in on itself. And that's again the concept that every dollar is issued as a loan, and therefore it requires repayment tomorrow of principal plus interest. Therefore, there needs to be more dollars in the system tomorrow than there was today. And if that doesn't happen, loans go bad, you have bankruptcies and failures and crashes. So if it's not growing, it's collapsing. And the blob does a great way of describing that for kids.
Absolutely.
And then, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I would just say agreeing completely with you.
Oh, good. Yeah. And then we've got the Big Bad Business Cycle, which is the idea of the boom bust cycle that's created by this money system and how to see it and take advantage of it. The Madness of Crowds, which is about groupthink, and you know how to stand up for what you believe in, and that's true both in financial markets and in in social situations, even when it seems like nobody else agrees. And really, the human psyche has this sort of, I don't know if you call it a bug or a feature, but because we're herd animals, and we grew over millions of years of evolution, we developed a mentality by which the biggest risk that we faced was being excommunicated from the herd. If we were, if we were kicked out of the tribe or the herd, we'd freeze to death or be picked off by a predator. So it seems it's very hard for us as individuals to think differently than what we view as what everybody else is thinking. And that's really dangerous today because on social media, we're easily influenced by what, is put forth as the mainstream narrative. And it's hard for us to stand on our own. And if you can help kids understand that early, they have a huge advantage. And then the last is the beautiful Bitcoin book to talk about what's the difference between sound money like gold or silver, fiat money like the paper or central bank digital currency or paper money, and then a Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency, and how that's different from all the others. But aside from the books, well, the mainstream stuff we put together too, and what we call the Ultimate Parent's Guide to Money Saving and Investing, and that's entirely free. And the cool thing about that is that your kids today and mine have an advantage now that they will never have again. And that's the gift of time, because the time value of money is where this concept of compounding comes into play. And when you start investing early, you actually have to put away a lot less than if you start investing in your 30s or 40s or 50s. The less time you have between when you're ready to spend that money, like let's say in retirement, the more you've got to try to play catch up. And as a kid, if you can help your kids open up a custodial brokerage account and buy into good businesses that will be around in a long time, boy, that money will compound for so many decades that they actually have to put away a lot less. So it's a good mix of what we consider to be the good information from mainstream financial advice around saving, investing, debt, and when to avoid it completely, and then the stuff that nobody teaches, which is around the essence of money itself.
Right. Sounds good. So you mentioned that there was a parent guide. Is there any way you can tell our listeners how to find that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to inflationeducation.net and just sign up for our email list, we will they'll, you'll probably get an email within 24 hours that has a link to that ultimate guide, which is free. And I actually stopped doing just about everything for months to put it together. Basically, put 25 years of my own research and financial education, both the mainstream and what I dug for myself, into it and tried to make it simple. And also funny, because I know this, even though this like fascinates me, I know it's kind of a boring subject for most. So we try to mix in humor, and we have a silver safe saving system in there to get your kids on a silver saving system so they can earn silver instead of fiat money. And boy, they know the difference when you put a silver coin in their hand versus a paper dollar, or even the coins that the US change. They took silver out of the US coinage in 1965. And that was again because they were printing too much money. And there's a big difference even if you go back pre-65 coins and thereafter, they just feel different.
We have learned so much in such a short period of time, and we really appreciate you coming today and sharing with us. We've got a lot
Oh.
to dig into still. I want to encourage all of our listeners to visit your website and to get that free guide. And is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap this up today, Phil?
Just a big thank you, Jamie. I think we homeschooled until my twins came, and then that kind of they blew us out of the water, and so we haven't gotten back to it yet, but we'd love to. There's no really better way to spend those times with kids and to be really prepared for the future that awaits. So I admire you and your audience. And the only other thing I'll mention is get the guide. It's free. If you do want to try the books, we back them by an unconditional alliance guarantee, which says if you buy the bundle, you'll save 40% today and forever on anything new that we publish. And if you don't like them for any reason, we'll refund 100% of your money and you can keep one anyway. It's that important that these stories find your family.
Absolutely. Wow. So I encourage our listeners to check that out. And thank you for joining us today. We hope that you'll take time to listen to our previous podcasts and that you'll take a moment and head over to Phil's website, as he mentioned today. And I will have all of these links and some more details about this conversation in the show notes that accompany the podcast. So thank you for joining us today. And until next time, I hope you're homeschooling and loving it.